Chapter 74 Gavin greeted the white with a smile as their blackguards fell into place behind them. Alessia, a petite woman, light-skinned for the blackguard, was pushing the white's wheeled chair. This was a change. The white was weakening, then. For some reason, though he had feared her for nearly two decades, the thought brought him nothing but dread. She was dying. And so was Gavin. And if she continued drafting so much, so too was Caris. Maybe this generation's time had passed. Meanwhile, the heretics under the Colour Prince grew strong. Kip wouldn't be ready in time, not with Gavin dying at this rate. He'd lost two colours in, what, 4 months?
So you faked Kip's test so your enemies wouldn't know he was a full-spectrum polychrome? The white said.
Yes, let's do jump right in. Anything to not give her a commitment to balance while she watched. Pretty much. Though someone sent an assassin after him immediately, so it obviously didn't work.
It appears someone is trying to start up the order again. There have been a few unexplained murders in the time you've been gone, but we can talk about that later.
They entered the lift together. Gavin took his time setting the weights. First, he wanted to get the weight exactly right so the stop wouldn't be jarring for the old woman. Second, he wanted her to hear what he had to say.
If you told me your plans beforehand every once in a while, I could help you, you know, Gavin.
But that would require me to trust you.
But that would require you to trust me, she said.
Scary. Too much time with the old goat. He wondered if he was becoming more like her or she him. Now there was a scary thought.
What's the end game, Gavin?
End game? He thought of his 7 purposes. 7 purposes in 7 years. He was 2 years in now, and he didn't have 5 years left anymore. He'd learned to travel faster than anyone ever had. Hell, he'd learned to fly. He'd failed at freeing Garriston, though if he followed Corvin's argument, he'd actually succeeded by saving the people. He still hadn't told Caris the truth, but he'd do that once he left here. And the other 4? Well, he'd be working toward all of them in this meeting, and he certainly couldn't tell her about any of...
So there is an end game, she said.
She lifted her eyebrows, coolly amused. Shit. He'd forgotten who he was talking to here. Forgotten to guard his every expression. Forgotten to lie first and think later. Protect. Guard. Hide. The fugitive's motto. Honesty is death. Loneliness is weakness. War, Gavin said darkly. The end is always war.
I don't even know that they'll declare war, but if you think they're going to declare you Promarchos again, you're insane,
she said as he applied the brake. He stopped them perfectly even with the level so that her wheeled chair could exit smoothly. He strode ahead, not waiting for her.
They're too afraid of you, Gavin.
Too afraid? They're not afraid enough. Gavin stepped into the meeting room and took a seat on the far side. The table around which they met was a circle, but Gavin wanted to be able to see who came in the door. A few of the colours were already seated. Sada Superviolet, representing Paria, sat next to Kleitos Blue. Sada was from minor nobility in a clan that wielded little clout in Paria. Mountain Parian. She had attained far more in her life than anyone would have expected through cold intelligence and fierce ambition. Indeterminate age, limbs lean, hands as gnarled as yucca palm branches, skin as psoriatic as a yucca palm's trunk. She wore her kinky hair gathered in small knots, and wore a tight-fitting cap of woven gold that sat tight against her scalp, with little gaps for each knot of hair. An odd style that, as far as Gavin knew, had originated with the woman herself. Like the superviolet she was, Sada brought a dispassionate perspective to all her votes, and was often the swing voter because she was immune to any pressure but that of logic. Hated lies. Kleidos Blue was Hrothgari through and through, but represented Illita. He was a coward. Intelligent, but lacking substance, no gravitas. He did what Andros told him on most matters. Gavin sat next to Kleitos, greeting him as if he didn't despise him. He was happy to sit next to the man, not for his company, but because it's hardest to surreptitiously study the expressions on the faces of those who sit right next to you. Kleitos didn't matter. Gavin didn't have to be able to study his face. Gia Tolva, the yellow, nodded to Gavin, smiled. At the centre of the colour spectrum, yellows could be truly fearsome, great souls who brought under their power the appeals of emotion and reason in perfect balance. Gia was no great soul, though she liked to think she was. In truth, she really just ended up being perfectly susceptible to appeals of reason and emotion both. She was Gavin's almost always. She'd been infatuated with him for years. His smile was enough to get her vote, though it had been a delicate act to keep her from trying to get into his bed. She tried her wiles on him every so often, and he deflected her propositions rather than rejected them. Vain creature. Good enough looking, but too much makeup, though she had cut back on the perfume after Andros made numerous explicit references to rooms smelling like cheap whores whenever she entered. She was proud of her unibrow, kept it perfectly coiffed. As he sat, Gavin smiled at the hairy caterpillar perched on her brow. Gia beamed. The others came in together, chatting. They were friendly, but tense. Delara Orange, the red-orange bichrome whose bosom was so large it ought to have had its own vote, looked drawn, grim, older than Gavin had ever seen her. She represented Atash. Her country had been invaded by the Colour Prince, and doubtless she would advocate war. Doubtless she had been advocating war since she'd first heard of the invasion. The sub-red was Aris of the Greenvales. She was perhaps 8 months pregnant now, serially pregnant, always. In her, the passions of sub-red were wedded to a cultural imperative for drafters to breed so as to replace the dead for the once interminable wars between Blood Forest and Hrothgar. She was, Gavin thought, perhaps 35, and she had 12 children. Not a one, if rumour was correct, by the same father. She had a curtain of straight red-red hair, freckles, and blue eyes sparkling with the crystalline detritus that marked a long time sub-red. She had perhaps 2 years left. Her 13, or by then probably 14, children would grow up honoured in Blood Forest. They would also grow up without a mother. "Where's Lunna Green?" Gavin asked Clytos. Clytos blanched. "I'm so sorry, Lord Prism." Lunna, despite being Hrothgari, was Gavin's. He'd carefully built up enough credits with her that if he called them all in, she would do almost anything for him. "What?" Gavin asked. "Oh, no. She had a stroke. She died." "She wasn't even 45, Gavin said. "I'm so sorry, Lord Prism." "She was right at the verge of breaking the halo for some time, and—" Clytos lowered his voice. "There were rumours she wasn't going to take the freeing. You understand?" "That she was trying to become a green white and she'd failed." "No, she wouldn't. Would she?" But that was the thing about facing death and insanity, wasn't it? You never knew what a person would do. Gavin had seen all sorts over the years. This was a disaster. A declaration of war required a simple majority. 8 votes were possible, 1 for each colour and 1 for the prism. In case of ties, the white got a vote. Gavin's count had included Delara Orange, who was a Tashian and would definitely vote for war, and Aris Greenvale, whose Blood Forest was directly on the warpath and who wasn't averse to war regardless. His own vote, with Lunna's, would bring it to 4. That would kick it up to the white, who he thought would vote for it. She wasn't a fool. But without Lunna, Gavin would have to sway Gia Tolva or Sara Superviolet. Gia voted with him often, but the Arbornians had no stake in a war, and wouldn't mind seeing Atash burn for a while as they pretended that their reluctance to help put out the flames was born of pure, high-minded pacifism. Sara Superviolet was even harder to judge. Paria was also far away from the fighting and wouldn't want to send its young men or its wealth. But Sada would do what was right, he hoped. Gavin would have to move fast if he was going to have a chance. Perhaps the new green would be amenable. If she or he wasn't, Gavin could structure the vote. His father would have already sent in his vote on war as a no. But if Gavin was tricky and quick, he could make there be votes on issues that the Red hadn't sent his vote down for. By not calling a straight up or down vote on declaring war, Gavin might be able to outmaneuver the old spider. Difficult, but possible. He would turn the old man's proud disregard for the spectrum on its head. "For all the satisfaction you get out of despising us, Father, there are costs. Lunna Green, though. She wouldn't have gone white, would she? But if she hadn't, dear O'Holam, the murder of a colour? Surely the order wasn't that good." This wasn't the right way to do this. He knew that. He wasn't prepared for this meeting. Not that it was his fault. They'd called for an emergency session weeks ago to be held as soon as he got back, so he couldn't wait, couldn't put it off. The longer he spent with these people, the more opportunities they had to notice that something was wrong with him. His eyes had still looked prismatic when he'd only lost blue. He'd asked Corvin,
But then his eyes' natural colour was blue. Now that he'd lost green, wouldn't his eyes start changing colour? This was all madness, and stumbling in the dark. There was conversation from the hall, and, wearing a luxurious green silk cloak, in came none other than Tisis Malagos, the astoundingly beautiful young green who'd sabotaged Kip's test, the woman who hated Gavin, because her family had reason to hate the real Gavin, the woman whose father had been murdered on Felia Giles' orders, because he could have exposed that Gavin wasn't really Gavin. She laughed at something her interlocutor said outside, then shot a look at the prism. Hazel eyes, heart-shaped face, pale skin, the preciously rare blonde hair, generous curves. An exotic beauty who hated him for nothing he had actually done. Perfect. Very, very young to be on the spectrum, though. How had that... And then her interlocutor stepped into view, wearing large, blacked-out spectacles under a crimson hood, and robes the colour of blood. "Father," Gavin said, his heart icing over. "What a surprise!"